Anvold Financial Group.
Two of your Friday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. The roundtable is making its way in studio. Brian McDaniel showed up during the break. Rob Dorr will be here momentarily. Plus, we're going to have a conversation with Katie Pavlich here in just a minute or so.
I'm going to make a prediction. Once Trump gets a hold of the helium shortage story, he's going to tweet about it. Like I've got a tweet deck. I put up a column just for helium. It is to see the people responding like we are to it and not understanding how this works. Like, helium shortage. Where are the scientists when you need them? Oh, no. Science will not help you. Right? Other people, global helium shortage? What? Party City closing 45 stores? Can't we make more? Some people get it. Oil, you can make synthetic from organic matter, not helium. It took Party, of all places, of all the benign
right
places.
It took, yeah.
Party City closing down.
Something that everybody can sort of relate right to and understand what it is and recognize that's what it took.
Just incredible. The story is just blowing my mind. The party is over for Party City. Company announced 45 stores will close this year amid global helium shortage. I'm just fascinated by this whole thing. We've been depleting the reserves. It's crazy.
Katie Pavlich.
Fake news. It's Amazon.
Right? Did you hear about this, Katie Pavlich from Fox News?
Well, that seems like a really silly answer to close 45 stores.
Well, what we found out, well, this is what we read about this a while ago. I remember reading, I think like about a year and a half ago, I read about this. And so the story this morning that Party City was closing 45 of its stores because of the helium shortage. And then we did some digging and found out that there's only three places in the world that have it. And it's actually,
really?
It's actually our fault. Because there's an article written in 2016 in the New York Times that we actually have a reserve for helium, and at some point the government started selling it off at a fraction of the price. So we just started using it up, and you cannot reproduce it. Like, once it's gone, it's
really?
Gone. Yes.
Come on.
No. We've done the research.
We've done the research.
Drew, have you...
We've spent literally like 10 minutes learning about this.
Where are the chemists? I think they can do something about this.
Drew has the list of the only other gases you can use to fill things up to float. Do you still have that?
The common gases that are lighter than air are hydrogen, helium, neon, nitrogen, ammonia, methane, and carbon monoxide.
Methane comes from cows. Can't we reproduce that?
Yeah, but we're not going to put that in party balloons. What if they pop?
Why not?
Why not? That's right. You don't have children yet, do you, Katie Pavlich?
We all know that no one wants to stay at a kid's party for that long. So it's actually a good way to make everyone late.
I'm telling you, once Trump gets wind of this, he's going to tweet about it. I'm looking forward to it. He's going to say something. We need to do something about peak helium. All right.
Oh my God.
Let's get to relevant stuff here. First off, you were traveling with the State Department. Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing? And was this your first time?
Yeah, this is my first time. So I got invited to cover Secretary Pompeo's trip this week to Finland, the UK, a surprise trip to Baghdad, and that we were supposed to go to Germany, but we went to Baghdad instead. And then we were supposed to go to Greenland yesterday, but that trip got canceled because of other more important issues back home. So it was awesome. I mean, I learned a lot. We covered the Arctic Council meeting that they do every year, and it was really interesting to watch the way that China is calling themselves a near Arctic state, which is not a thing, but they're, being more aggressive in the Arctic and setting up shipping lanes, and Russia's helping them. So, while we were concerned about that, the rest of the countries were, concerned and only concerned about global warming and climate change. And I was assured that behind the scenes they were, in fact, concerned about Russia and China, but it was interesting that publicly they were not saying that. And then we went to Baghdad randomly, which was great, because of the Iran threat that was, that we know more about now than we did when we were on the plane. And then the secretary had a series of meetings in London 2 days ago, and he gave the Margaret Thatcher series lecture, so I wore my cowboy boots in solidarity with her and with Ronald Reagan to show my support. So it was a great week, covered a lot, lots of news happening. So yeah, it was good.
How many other reporters and journalists were you on the plane with?
So total there were five of us.
Oh, wow.
And there were two crew guys. So small pool, and it was awesome. I mean, we just learned so much, and we're running from place to place, and the State Department really does an amazing job of making sure that we're going to get where we're going on time. I mean, we were in a motorcade the whole time, making sure that we were there, getting the shots, talking to the secretary on the plane about certain issues. So I was really impressed with the way that they handled everything.
How much information did you talked about that surprise trip to Baghdad. How much information did you have on your travel plans? And at what point did you know that you're flying to Baghdad? Or it was like, oh, hey, we're landing and we're in Baghdad.
So Tuesday morning, we were in Finland, ready to go to Germany, and then on to the UK that same day. And the Germany trip got canceled without an explanation. So we knew we were going somewhere else, but we were not told until we were on the plane, wheels up, no Wi-Fi.
Nightmare.
I know. I want that to happen to John so bad.
Wi-Fi. Yeah, no way to communicate where we were going. And then they told us where we were going. So we detoured and got on a 6-hour flight to Baghdad. And once we couldn't talk about where we were until we left for security reasons. And we did the corkscrew thing down in. There was lots of turbulence.
Let's talk a lot. What do you mean corkscrew thing down? What are you talking about?
When planes land in hostile areas, they have to do what they call a corkscrew going down
on the land
to make it harder
to get shot.
Yeah,
basically, to avoid missiles.
I can't confirm that that's what we did, but it sure felt like that's what we did.
I'm assuming it's like banked. It's got to be, like you're going down a slide at a kiddie park,
Basically, yeah.
I'm good. Okay? I'm fine. I'm sorry I asked. I'm gonna peace out now. Oh my gosh, that's insane.
So, we couldn't leave the base in Baghdad, unfortunately, because none of us had visas, but. It was pretty cool. So.
I'll say this really quick. And Drew, I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's moments like this with talking with Katie Pavlich from Fox News where I'm immediately taken back to the first time that we met Katie. And you were just a University of Arizona student, and where we flash forward to now, and you're corkscrewing into Baghdad
with the Secretary of State
and the State Department. That is just surreal to me. Yeah, wow.
It is surreal. I mean, that's the thing. I was walking into Joint Base Andrews on Sunday night to get on the plane. It was just one of those moments where you go, wow, this is awesome. This is one of the most amazing things of my career. I just felt so proud to be an American and to be able to go. And it was just the job that I have and what's led up to that point is just incredible. So it just was awesome.
There was quite a bit of talk on Twitter over Pompeo and a couple of different visits that he was supposed to be making. And you mentioned the cancellation. Do you have anything further to add to that? The increasing tensions in the Middle East, and we could talk to you about this, absolutely, but the rockets being fired into Gaza, the threats from Iran, the movement of our carrier over there. I know there were some former security analysts that were saying that Iran was specifically behind those attacks into Israel to sort of take Israel's awareness away from Syria, get them busy in Gaza so they're not focused on Syria. So kind of a long-winded question, but with Pompeo, is there anything you can add about the cancellations? And then obviously, because of your background and your time in Israel, want to get your thoughts on what's been taking place there as well.
So at first, Pompeo said that the threats and escalation were not related to Gaza specifically at this point. Now that doesn't, of course, the rockets are provided by Iran in Gaza to Hamas and now the Islamic Jihad. But it was an unrelated issue when it came to the U.S. moving their carrier and, this security visit that we did to Iraq. What we were told was very limited in terms of what the credible specific threats were, but now we know after digging in a little bit and finding some new information that what happened was the Iranian Revolutionary Guard gave the green light to Iran's proxy groups to carry out attacks on American interests in Iraq and in other places as well. My understanding of it is that it was on U.S. troops, not necessarily on American civilians. But that's just the impression that I got. They weren't very specific about what exactly they were talking about. But in terms of, you know, what happened in Israel, you know, they're always trying to distract. Israel is always focused on every single inch of their border because they have to be. But, you know, there are questions now about how long Israel is going to put up with Hamas or Islamic Jihad firing 700 rockets into their country. And then as soon as they respond, they're saying, oh, we want a ceasefire, right? Like, oh, please stop, you know. Seems a little bit ridiculous, but that's what happens every single time.
Where does, you know, there was talk obviously with Benjamin Netanyahu in the election recently, but you know, the agreeing to the ceasefire. Can you delve a little bit into that? A couple of articles that I read, he's in a tough spot. I mean, it's in the best interest to adhere to the ceasefire, but I know that there's some controversy attached to that from a lot of different people.
Yeah, so, you know, the reason why he's in a very tough position is that, you know, this keeps happening. People are being killed, and the psychological toll that it takes on people who live specifically in the south of Israel, who have to sleep in bomb shelters and whose kids can't, you know, go to school without having to go to school in a bomb shelter, that's been going on for years now. I mean, the first time that I went to Israel was to specifically cover Operation Protective Edge, which was the war of the summer of 2014 when they were going back and forth and Israel was responding and they were sending in operations and Hamas was still, you know, barraging rockets into Israel. The problem is that they want the rockets to stop, but in order to really make all of this stop, Israel would have to do a ground invasion. And in Gaza, every single house is booby-trapped. It would be very difficult to go in with ground troops and not get a ton of Israeli troops killed. So it's kind of this, like, issue of figuring out how to manage and also respond when they're shooting hundreds of rockets into a sovereign country, but also trying to weigh the risk of what it would mean to actually go in and get the job done. And what that would look like, and it would be really ugly. So he's in a tough spot because people are very frustrated. It keeps happening, but at the same time, unless they're willing to send in ground troops into a booby-trapped, you know, piece of land, basically, then that's the problem. So there aren't good solutions on either side.
This is kind of the way of life over there. I mean, it's always fascinating to me when I'm online and, you know, you look up stories and then the different ads pop up and then you see tourism ads for Israel, you know, but they're sitting there right next to a story about, you know, rockets being, and I think a lot of people are lost on perspective if you haven't gone to Israel, but then you have a story there of rockets being launched into Gaza and you kind of just go, wow, for the people of Israel, this must just be par for the course.
Well, and it's, you know, it's frustrating because other Arab countries prop them up as well. Like Qatar just sent, I think, $1 billion or something like that to them after this whole thing, which kind of sends the message that, hey, the more rockets you launch, the more money we're going to give you. And all of that money will go to terrorism because Gaza is completely owned by Hamas. Now, the bigger issue, I think, is how American lawmakers react to this. And you had Ilhan Omar, of course, our favorite, saying that Gaza is occupied, even though Israel left Gaza in 2005 and literally ripped every single Jew out of their house, 8,000 people, and left Gaza for them to have it. And in response, this is what they've done over the years, is just continue to attack Israel. The misleading conversations and the lies that have been perpetuated continue as well, which is also very frustrating with the propaganda game. And it's exactly what Hamas wants.
Just a couple minutes left with you, Katie. I want to touch on the Trump White House exerting executive privilege over the unredacted Mueller report. Obviously, you know, this is one of those instances where, you know, people on the left that had nothing to say but, you know, crickets when Obama asserted executive privilege over mm-hmm. the Fast and Furious documents and prevented Eric Holder from responding to congressional subpoenas, had nothing to say about that but are completely outraged by this. Just with a couple minutes left, I want you to talk about, because you covered the Fast and Furious scandal better than anybody I know, talk about some of the key differences in your mind between Obama's assertion of executive privilege and Trump's in this instance.
Yeah, and the contempt vote as well. I mean, there's just no comparison. The Fast and Furious documents were being requested by Congress because hundreds of people were killed, including a Border Patrol agent. And the way that the White House handled it was by saying that they were never involved, and as more information got closer to the White House, and as Eric Holder continued to refuse to release information to Congress to look at as part of their oversight of the Justice Department, that's when Obama asserted executive privilege. It wasn't to protect grand jury information, which is exactly what Bill Barr has done by not turning over, quote, the full unredacted version. When we talk about the full unredacted version, we're talking about 0.02% of the report. And Democrats on Capitol Hill, the chairman, have been invited to review an unredacted copy minus the grand jury information that by law you're not allowed to publish it to anybody. They've been invited to look at that, and they have all declined to look at it. So, you know, this idea that this contempt vote or this executive privilege, this contempt vote is valid and comparable to Eric Holder's is absurd. And the executive privilege issue for now is really just about protecting grand jury information, which is protected by law anyway.
Katie, Brian McDaniel here, and an interesting link between the Holder contempt charge and the state of Minnesota is that there were 17 congressional Democrats that voted with the Republicans on that, and one of them was our then, well, actually two Minnesota congressmen, but Tim Walz voted to hold Holder in contempt, and he is now our governor. So that is something that I think has not been widely reported here in the media, surprising. And I look forward to telling everybody.
Well, that's the thing. Holder was voted in civil and criminal contempt by both Republicans and Democrats, and polling at the time said that the contempt vote was absolutely valid. And there was a long period of time between when all of these document requests were made for Fast and Furious and when finally they went to the contempt vote. With the current situation, it's been like a month since the release of the report, and they're already on contempt. I mean, there's been no effort to kind of work together from Democrat side to get information that they're requesting, which they're not going to get anyway because it's grand jury information.
Fox News, Katie Pavlich. Well, glad you're back home, and thanks for taking time out, especially on a different day. When are you going to be on TV next?
I will be on the television, I believe, on Monday. So we'll see you then.
All right, have a great weekend, Katie. Thanks.
We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
651-989-5855. Use the hashtag TCNT, especially if you want to put in your picks for the Friday news quiz coming up at 8:35 this morning.
Brian McDaniel, Rob Dorr, Sam Sansevier will be your contestants. Those are your choices to choose from. We have fabulous prizes awaiting those who make the correct pick.
Yeah, helium balloons, I hear. Gonna be part of it.
Party City gift cards.
Before... Oh, this is good. Before we get to AOC and Bernie Sanders and their brilliant idea for banking, we will dive into this. Cubs indefinitely banned fan who used offensive hand gesture during a Doug Glanville, behind Doug Glanville at a game.
Alleged
11:30.
#651-989-5855 is the phone number. #250. On a mobile device, and just say TCNT. That will get you in there to Sam as well. You want to comment on anything throughout the show?
Sort of the running story behind the show today is this: Party City is closing 45 of its stores over this helium shortage. And I remember us talking about this probably like a year ago, that eventually this is going to happen in the reserves. And I apparently we had forgotten that you can't make it Somebody tweeted out that about the end of helium, right? Is this the end of helium? They say yes and no, although the answer here sounds like it's the end of helium. There's some in the atmosphere that can be mined by gas centrifuges or can create helium through fusion. It's just expensive. Using helium for party balloons is going to seem as odd as using whales as a source of tiki torch fuel. Which apparently that was a thing for a while. I was unaware of that, and I'm glad that that changed.
Are you?
What, that we're not killing whales anymore?
Well, I mean, at least the whales are more sustainable.
Yes, seriously.
Well, and renewable resource.
Exactly.
Along those lines, John, in the Star Trek movie reboot, Kirk is going to go back in time, and instead of picking up whales, he's going to pick up helium.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Write it up.
Somebody else tweeted, we've hit helium celium.
Instead of helium and shelium, we're not going to...
Oh, we're going back to this.
We're not going to heal as a country until we have wheelium.
And apparently helium was the only thing keeping Party City afloat.
Oh, that's a helium pun right there.
Got it.
Sam, we were talking earlier about, you know, people, you know, sucking on helium to make their voice sound funny. And I think... We were wondering if anybody had ever put their mouth directly on a tank and done it that way.
Yeah, and I said there's some people that have.
Apparently, a friend of a listener did because we got an email from Michael saying that one of his friends back in high school, they run out of balloons. I guess they were having some fun. He went right to the tank and he says, based on the scream and look on his face, it was not pleasant.
Oh,
I mean, it's pretty high pressure stuff coming out of it.
Yeah, that sounds like a really bad idea. Really bad idea.
But, you know, high school kids are stupid. Nothing sounds like a bad idea to a high school kid.
Nope.
All right, from CBS, 2 days after a fan was seen making an OK symbol with his hand on NBC Sports Chicago broadcast of a Cubs game, the team has said they have permanently banned the man from Wrigley Field. When did we hit the accelerator on that particular hand gesture to the point where, you know, a fan gets indefinitely banned for using it? I mean, I know there was the ridiculous controversy around it, but we seem to have made a big, or at least somebody made a big leap in regards to this ridiculous controversy.
This whole thing started as a 4chan hoax. I mean, it really did. This whole thing, you know, making the OK signal a secret symbol of white supremacy that, you know, Nazis all give to each other. It all started as a 4chan hoax. The problem is enough people believed it that it started to take on a life of its own.
It, in some instances, became a kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
Where actual white supremacists are like, hey, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, white supremacists are not known to be the smartest group.
Not a deep IQ or gene pool.
Thinkers, right?
Well, let's remember back locally when progressives lost their mind over Pointergate. With Mayor Hodges,
right?
Where you know the right had or at least what they consider the right leaning media had interpreted a sign as a gang symbol,
right?
You know,
was really, Betsy Hodges, yeah. So that was ridiculous. That. But this idea that, you know, the OK signal, which has been used for hundreds of years, which, you know, all races and political leanings have used it, and suddenly now it's an evil white supremacist thing. But it's only an evil white supremacist thing when it's convenient for it to be.
Well, and I'm surprised that the Cubs had the bandwidth to take issue with this, because they're spending so much time just focusing on being in first place and getting back to the World Series, so that way I can get another tattoo.
This is baseball, right?
To the best of my knowledge.
So is it Doug Glanville? Glanville?
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Former Cub player.
All right. So he was reporting live during, he was a former outfielder. He was reporting live Tuesday night's game against the Miami Marlins when a fan seated behind him was spotted flashing the peace sign before making and holding the OK gesture. That symbol has been used for many different things, one including the white power symbol, according to the Anti-Defamation League.
And it's also used for the, you know, the Made You Look game. right? Where you hold, you do that, and you hold it. It's got to be like below the waist.
Yeah,
be below the waist.
Oh, I never heard. I never played the
Major League game.
Oh, no, it's so really. It's so dumb.
Yeah, no, never played then. Certainly not.
Because in reality, it really wasn't the OK symbol because the fingers weren't up; they were down.
Right.
It was the Major Look game where if you hold this below your waist, and John, if you were to look at this. If I catch you looking at it, then I get to punch you.
Oh, okay. That's why I don't know about it. Because if I did, I probably blocked it from my memory.
It's the Major Look game. My brothers did it to me all the time where they would be like, hey, look down here. And of course you look and they're doing that and you get punched.
That to me
is the most likely use in this instance where this person was putting it on camera. That's what it looked like to me. It looked like they were doing the Major Look thing.
In the story, they call it the circle game.
Yes.
Okay.
You're making a circle. It goes below the waist.
Yeah.
Eric Ole Olson made sure that everybody at Robbinsdale Cooper High School knew that game and knew it very well.
So, and again, this seems to me to fall under that idea that if you talk to the fan where this happened to, I think you'd be able to get a pretty good idea of what his intention was, right? Like, you know, if you asked him, hey, what were you doing with that? If he goes to, oh, I was doing a Major Look, you're going to be able to tell whether or not he's lying or being, you know, if he's lying or is actually being genuine about that. Because before you guys mentioned the circle game, Major Look game, Rob, to what you were saying, a bit sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. If the guy legitimately was doing that because this particular reporter, this former outfielder, is black and he was doing that for that reason, then yeah, I can see that.
But there's zero evidence
of
that.
Right, exactly.
There's zero evidence.
To me, talking to the fan would be the best course of action. Be like, hey, why did you do that? Oh, I was doing a Major Look. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the Cubs apparently did not even talk to this fan.
Okay, well, there you go.
They released a statement that they attempted to, but Will Kane, who is an ESPN reporter or ESPN host, tweeted out yesterday, I spoke to the Cubs. There is very little, if any, other evidence that this guy was flashing a white power symbol. No background, no social media posts, nothing. They also haven't spoken to him and told me that they have no interest in hearing their side.
We're going to get to your phone calls, more comments on this. Use the hashtag TCNT. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Right now, let's go ahead and hear the Minnesota Moment with Jason Lewis.
5 FM.
One hour from now, we will play the Friday News Quiz. Go ahead and start making your predictions of who you think is going to win. Rob Dorr, Brian McDaniel, Sam Sansevier will be your contestants this week. Fabulous prizes await those who correctly predict the winner.
People are already calling for a ban on any helium party balloons on Twitter. It's already... I'm telling you, I give it maybe not today, but maybe Monday or Tuesday. Trump will tweet about it.
Nah.
Something about doing the helium.
I don't think this gets on Trump's radar.
I think it does. I think he's going to be right.
If it could take over the public's mind like it took over this show, maybe he would.
Yeah, good point.
The way that Twitter feed is blowing up, finding out about it.
I feel like I'm getting a little bit lit up for sounding anti-balloon. And you know what? I'm gonna double down. You know what? Ban all balloons.
Oh my
God. All helium-based balloons.
No, I don't even care if they're helium-based.
Why do you want to put our show in such a precarious controversy? Controversial position like that, Sam.
Because balloons are awful.
The opinions of Sam Sansevier do not reflect those of Drew.
But in good news, I was just hired by the Mylar industry to lobby y'all.
Well, and for those to get caught up, and we have some other things we'll get to get caught up. There was a story that we found when the show started that Party City was closing 45 of its stores, and when I saw the headline, I was like, "What?" You know, okay. I was surprised just because you don't see a lot of party supply places. I mean, Party City is kind of it. And it was because of the fact that we're facing a helium shortage, and that's 90% of their revenue are the Mylar party balloons. And when you look at this story and compare it to all the different ways that we are looking to save the environment and you know, grab people's taxpayer dollars, light bulbs. I mean, it's just as an example and all this type of stuff. And here you have an actual resource that we are going to run out of that we cannot duplicate. And yet we're to the point where we've almost depleted all of our resources. And we do use it for really important scientific research and space research and medical research simply because there's no political capital attached to it. Neither side could grab onto it, and no agenda could go and do anything with it. We haven't been talking about it. And because of that, you know, you're not going to have a bunch of scientists or, you know, medical professionals or scientists out there protesting, save all the helium. So now you got stores that are closing down, and we're going to run out of helium soon.
Well, and I guess we know what's going to be in all of those future Avatar movies. Unobtainium.
Unobtainium will be replaced by helium.
Well, they say we could go to the moon and try to get more, but that's, that'd be super expensive. Well,
somebody tweeted. Let me find this tweet real quick.
That was the movie Moon was about that. Mining Helium 3.
Oh, you're right! You are absolutely right! I didn't even thought, I just saw that like within the past year. I completely forgot about that.
So, a friend of the show, Joe, on Twitter said helium can be made through radioactive decay and be found in natural gas released by volcanic activity. So make more nuclear reactors, store the material in the Ring of Fire, and wait. Problem solved.
Well, I'm down with that.
Sure, why
and
not?
We get Godzilla too.
I know that sounds like really solid science to me.
Yeah.
Hey, and to that, since you brought it up, Drew, we can do this real quick. Nuclear power plants, and we mentioned this yesterday. Nuclear power plants are so big, complicated, and expensive to build that more are shutting down than opening up. An Oregon company, NuScale Power, wants to change that trend by building nuclear plants that are the opposite of existing ones. They're smaller, simpler, and cheaper. The company says its plant design using small modular reactors could also work well with renewable energy such as wind and solar. I'm convinced they're just saying that, right? Because they know, I mean, look, if you're going to try to have a startup where you're going to try to convince people, because they're basically the photograph, it looked like your industrial parks. It looked about an area the size of an industrial park where they were going to build these small nuclear power plants. They say that they could provide backup electricity when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. But the reality is, I think they put that in there because they know they're going to have to get the environmentalists on board that are pushing for wind and solar if you're going to have any sort of future convincing the public or anybody else that, hey, we can build smaller, efficient nuclear power plants.
Yeah, I mean, locally, the champion for nuclear
is allowed on this show.
Thank you. Was always Amy Koch. When she was majority leader in the Senate, you know, she was a big proponent of that kind of power, and still is. You know, there's always hope that that's something that we're going to be able to expand upon, though the political realities make it highly unlikely anytime soon.
This company seems to be zeroing in on something that I feel like a lot of the environmental activists miss out on, is what do you do when it's dark outside and when the wind's not blowing?
Right.
And that's, that part gets left out of the conversation. And they're talking about the 100% renewable energy up at the Capitol, doing that mandate by 2050. And I asked, I said, okay, great. But what about when the wind's, well, there's hydro. There, hydro is like 99.9% developed. All of the spots that get high yield hydroelectricity are already built. So that's not a scalable option. And there's a big solar farm down by Jeremy Munson's district, and he posted photos all winter long of them being covered in snow.
Right.
And they're not brushing it off because it's not cost effective for them to go send somebody out to clean them off. And so you start looking at all that, and they're zeroing in on this. What do you do when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining? Where do you get your power?
Well, and I'm all for them attaching that and using that as an excuse. You have 98 nuclear reactors operating in the country. They're now large because they were designed to take advantage of economies of scale to respond to a dilemma, because many are at risk of closing of the next decade because they can't compete with less expensive natural gas and renewable energy. They've developed we've developed economies of small, said Jose Reyes. He's the chief technology officer for NuScale. Instead of one big nuclear reactor, he says his company will string together a series of up to 12 smaller reactors. They would be built in a factory and transported by truck to a site that would be prepared at the same time. And I do like the idea of coupling it and using it as an excuse to push it forward. Look, convince the wind and solar crowd that this is a way to grab what it is they're producing when they can and store it. I would also believe that over a long enough timeline, you would begin to see the efficiency of those nuclear power plants over wind and soil, and that would probably become the more predominant use of it. So yeah, then we can, you know, then we can go and nuke all the wind farms, right, and the solar panels.
Well, I guess that's one way to get more helium.
I made a big jump.
Wow. that took a turn.
How long? So Sam's grandchildren lifetime, where our cars are powered by little tiny nukes, you think? They're flying around.
A mini nuke reactor in their pocket.
Yeah, right? Well,
we have submarines that are powered by nukes. So
right?
Why not?
Yeah.
Right. I'll never understand the failure of the environmental group to latch on to the benefits, power, potential of nuclear energy. I'll never understand it. It's, you know, nuclear is just a boogeyman. It's irrational. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, this irrational fear of nuclear power that collectively we have.
Well, we're back to agenda again. Right. I mean they have an agenda. They stand to lose the power if a more efficient way to come about it, and so therefore they're going to vilify and demonize the one thing that could actually provide us with cheap, safe, affordable energy.
And also it exposes the fact that the environmental movement has been co-opted by people with an agenda that is absolutely not environmental in nature at all.
Yeah.
It's about economics. It's about shifting away from capitalism.
Well, and anecdotes have a very, very powerful ability to captivate the public's mind.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So whenever they, if you're talking about nuclear power, despite the fact that there are thousands of nuclear power plants in the world, you start talking and people bring up Chernobyl or they bring up Fukushima and you know, Three Mile Island, and
those are the three examples.
Yeah, yeah. the three examples, yeah. In history, in 60 years of nuclear power plants, you have three, but. That takes people's, and this is on any issue. I mean, it's on my issue, on all sorts of issues. Just an anecdote can captivate people's minds and make them ignore everything else that says this is the exception, not the rule.
And the impact of those three examples has been wildly overblown.
Oh yeah. Well, Chernobyl, maybe not. But.
Yeah, Chernobyl, you know, there's an HBO thing about that right now. You should watch.
I heard it's really good.
It is really good so far. But
Game of Thrones.
After Game of Thrones. But what's interesting about the environmental movement on this is that, you know, while they, you know, they so smugly say, well, you know, we're the party of science. Well, their protests against, you know, mining and nukes and all the other things are faith-based. Well,
they're protesting against pipelines.
They just believe that it yeah. has to yeah. be
pipelines.
Wrong.
Pipelines.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a religion.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And that doesn't get talked about enough, because it's when you have somebody that has, with the power of belief in somebody is a very, very almost impossible thing to change. So when you've looked at facts and gone like, nope, I believe this. This is, you know, that power of belief and treating it as a religion. It's almost impossible to go and present any facts that are going to end up, you know, changing that.
I mean, the only fact that we really know is that the Chicago Cubs are in first place.
It's baseball, right?
I know a lot more facts.
And they're run by
that.
Idiots.
Nah, no, idiots in first place.
Hey, speaking of idiots... there are dumb ideas, and then there's whatever this is. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders have teamed up to introduce a new idea. Nonprofit banking services done via the post office.
Yeah.
Subprime loans would be given out to people who have terrible credit risk, thereby causing high default
God,
rates.
Please, no!
Because absolutely nothing bad would come of that.
No!
And the post office is just a model of financial stability.
Unbelievable. No. It's unbelievable that they would even try to suggest something this stupid.
It wasn't that long ago.
Right.
That the whole bubble collapsed because of subprime loans being given out to people that can't afford it, can't afford to pay them back. Do they have that short of a memory? Or do they just think we're all so stupid that we won't remember that happened?
It's a big short of a memory.
Yeah.
That was good.
She just found out what a garbage disposal was.
Brian McDaniel, take notes.
AOC just found out what a garbage disposal was, so I'm not all that surprised.
That's fair.
You know,
that's fair.
The article goes on to say this. No one discriminates against people of color when it comes to loans. Banks want to turn a profit, full stop. That's their only motivator. They don't care if you are purple. The reason minority groups have a harder time getting loans is because they include higher rates of individuals who do not have the credit nor the capital to be lent to it. According to the article, loans are not handouts or a right. They exist for the sole supposition of being that the person can give, given the loan, must go and pay the money back with interest. What was the movie that the subprime loan movie?
Big Short.
Big Short. Yeah.
I literally made a joke about that 30 seconds.
I'm sorry. I was looking over the details of the story. That movie is a painful watch for me. Because I was a part of that whole deal.
It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah. I bought a house right in the middle of that. I was a person that should not have been given a loan. I had the bank cut me a check to go and pay down my credit. This should be totally fine, right? They're giving me extra money.
Can we sit AOC and Bernie down and like make them watch that on repeat for like 24 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't end up foreclosing, but I was given way too much money to buy way too much house. And, I bought another house, I bought a house last year, and it was a vastly different experience than it was, back in the day where they would just, give you as much money as you needed, whether you had a job or not.
Right.
There's a, don't knock putting that on repeat. There's a Margot Robbie.
In the bathtub. Yeah.
It's a good scene.
And a quick little rewind button on Selena Gomez on the player. Well, it's just nice that she's getting clean.
And it's nice to see people like Margot Robbie getting work.
It is.
There's not enough work in Hollywood for, cute blondes like that.
Yeah, for you. Appreciate her acting skills, especially in that moment. It's very inspirational.
She's a very talented person.
Coming up, Reason.com, one of our favorite websites, right? They're highlighting us. Minnesota City will soak taxpayers to build water park at Mall of America. Mm. Yeah, we're gonna dive into that. And then after that, what? That's funny because Margot Robbie.